Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk, a listener-supported ministry. In fact, thank you so much for being part of that support for James Dobson Family Institute.
Hello, and welcome to Family Talk, the radio home of Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, and today on the program, we're bringing you a very special interview. Now, this program has never been aired before here on Family Talk. It's something that we have curated from our vaults, an archival master featuring Dr. Dobson and his good friend, Dr. Jay Kessler. Over the next 3 days, they'll be discussing grandparenting and its vital role to the institution of the family and to culture. You know, grandparenting is as much needed today as it was when this conversation was first recorded, probably even more so. I can tell you firsthand, Lisa and I are so busy right now leaning into the relationships we have with our grandkids, probably as busy now as we were when we were parents to our young ones ourselves. Now, let me tell you about Jay Kessler. Dr. Kessler is the former president and chancellor of Taylor University in Upland, Indiana. He graduated from Taylor in 1958 and is best known for his writings and radio work. He has served as preaching pastor of Upland Community Church, was president of Youth for Christ from 1973 to 1985, and was president of Taylor University from 1985 to 2000. Dr. Kessler is also the author of nearly 30 books, including popular titles like 10 Mistakes Parents Make with Teenagers and Being Holy, Being Human, Dealing with the Expectations of Ministry. Today, Dr. Dobson and his esteemed guest will be highlighting the undeniable influence of grandparents. Here now is our host, Dr. James Dobson, with today's edition of Family Talk.
Go back to 1978 in San Antonio, Texas. I addressed a group of about 3,000 people at Trinity University, Laurie Auditorium. On that morning, I started speaking, I think I talked all day, about grandparents. And I read something that I had gotten from the staff newspaper, kind of a newsletter that was put out by Children's Hospital of Los Angeles. I was on the staff at the time. And they had a little paper called The Chatter. And a nurse by the name of Juanita Nelson, who has since retired, submitted a little piece called What is a Grandmother? Written by a 9-year-old girl. I don't know who this little girl is, but I know that she sure understands grandparents. So we're going back to 1978. I'm going to read this. Written by this little girl, this little unnamed girl. She said, "A grandmother is a lady who has no children of her own. She likes other people's little girls and boys. A grandfather is a man grandmother. He goes for walks with the boys, and they talk about fishing and stuff like that. Grandmothers don't have to do anything except to be there. They're old, so they shouldn't play hard or run. It is enough if they drive us to the market where the pretend horse is and to have lots of dimes ready. Or if they take us for walks, they should slow down past things like pretty leaves and caterpillars, and they should never say, 'Hurry up.' Usually grandmothers are fat, but not too fat to tie your shoes. They wear glasses and funny underwear. They can take their teeth and gums off. Grandmothers don't have to be smart. Only answer questions like, 'Why isn't God married?' and 'How come dogs chase cats?' Everybody should try to have a grandmother because they are the only grown-ups who have time." I think that's a great little piece, and it serves to introduce our topic today, because we're going to talk about grandparenting with a man who knows whereof he speaks. Dr. Jay Kessler is with us today, and he has 9 grandchildren of his own. You don't look a day over 90, Jay.
That's true. Don't feel a bit older.
We're delighted to have you with us to talk about such an important topic. Dr. Kessler has spent 30 years working with kids of all ages for Youth for Christ. Has a Bachelor of Arts degree from Taylor University in Upland, Indiana, plus 6 honorary doctorates. Jay has written many books. One that we're going to talk about today is called Grandparenting, the Agony and the Ecstasy. That sounds like it might be about Michelangelo or something, but that's a great title. Jay, is grandparenting all it's cracked up to be?
I've said it's one of God's 2 or 3 really great ideas. It's really a good thing. But on the kind of serious side of getting this thing started, I got into it by discovering, as I did family conferences around the country, that anymore grandparents were performing sort of beyond the milk and cookies role that I had thought of heretofore. And so I began to do some research on the subject and really find that grandparenting is a very central thing.
Hmm. With the disintegration of the family, at least in so many instances where there's a dysfunctional situation, and I'm told now that 3 million grandchildren are being raised by grandparents instead of by their parents. That has an awesome impact culturally when you think about it.
Yeah, and one of the things I was trying to establish in the book early on was that this is not a surprise to God. In fact, you knowing me, of course, know that I start always trying to find the scriptural basis for what we're doing. And in the Bible, I found in one of the real most ancient stories, really, that Lot, for instance, was a young man who was apparently orphaned early on, raised by his grandma and grandpa. Grandma died then. Grandpa kept him for a number of years. Then grandpa died. Then he was raised by his uncle Abraham. Hmm. And suddenly it began to dawn on me that throughout the Bible we have this pattern of God building redundancy into the human condition. Mm-hmm. That is, every child has really six adults God has arranged to care for them, grandparents on each side and parents. So if the system works properly, someone of those six ought to be around to provide family for every child. And what I really discovered was an awful lot of people of grandparenting age today, my age and a little younger, many of them younger, by the way, really kind of look at the empty nest, a way to get away from grandparenting and say, you know, buying a bumper sticker for their RV that says, you know, we're spending our children's inheritance or something like that. And that's all funny enough and so on. But the truth of the matter is, with all the woe in the culture over disintegrating families, the grandparent suddenly has that same role that they had in ancient times when wars and famine and so on did to them what Lot's family did to him.
Even though it's God's plan of redundancy, it's also a very stressful thing when grandparents who thought they had that job done are now disciplining and training and guiding and doing homework and then taking them through adolescence again with all of that, implications. That's tough, isn't it?
Anytime we babysit, you know, any grandparent, they understand, you know, it's grand when they come and grand when they go, you know. You know why God gives small children to younger people. And yet one of the theses of this book is to help Christians to evaluate this. I've talked to, I can't tell you how many dozens of grandparents in tears over the fact that they say, hey, we spent our whole life to try to get free, and now we find ourselves doing exactly what you're saying, you know, raising a toddler or something like this. And I said, wait a minute, you sit in church and keep saying to God, God, I want to be useful. I want to serve your kingdom. I want to find something to do, you know, give to the missionaries, become part of a ladies' fellowship or something. Well, those are all noble enough, but is there anything more important than the children and your own family? And so in some cases, I've seen grandparents kind of suck it up and say, well, we're going to make another go at this. And they are wiser, and they're more relaxed, and some of them do it very, very well. And so part of the purpose of the book was to encourage them to do this without sensing that God is gypping me in some way, but God is giving me meaning maybe. And maybe in some cases they can do it better the second time around than they did the first time.
Now, we're referring to those situations where grandparents actually assume custody and raise those kids, but there's another whole category where your children with their children come home to live again. They rebound the so-called rubber nest that, you know, all of a sudden you have a house full again.
Yeah, and you know, when you think about who's responsible for this, I think families must understand that this is part of what God builds into the family, that grandparents have this role. And yet it's not all dysfunction, of course. There are millions of families where grandparenting provides some other things. One thing I've talked about in this book at quite great length, really, is the role of grandparents to be culture carriers, to have a longer memory, to tell kids what it was like in a former generation and give them kind of a sense. I look on this as kind of like David when he stood in front of Goliath. He said, the same God who was faithful in the past that delivered me from the paw of the bear and the mouth of the lion, he delivered me from this uncircumcised Philistine. That is, God has been around a long while.
Yes.
He was faithful in the past. He's faithful now. He'll be faithful in the future. And I think grandparents have a long enough view to make that a convincing argument to young people.
As a child, I was blessed by some of the most wonderful grandparents. The role that they played in my life, second only to my parents, but still having tremendous influence on me, especially from a godly perspective. I had a little grandmother, weighed about 97 pounds, that just lived in the presence of the Lord. And she was just so able to communicate that to me and get me on my knees about everything when I was 5, 6, 7 years of age. Mm-hmm. And that was a very important part of my childhood. You had some wonderful grandparents, too.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, my grandfather, my dad's side, lived with us for many years when I was growing up as a boy. And so I think of one time, really, boys and I had gone down the alley and we found a trash can with a hot plate in it, one of these flat hot plates. And if it had a cord plug on it, you know, boys will try to figure out, does it work? So we sneaked in the garage and plug it in. Sure enough, it heated up. So we were taking ants and sticking them on there and letting them, you know, try to run toward the edge. And before they get to the edge, they'd burn their legs off. Yeah, yeah, little nice kids. And Grandpa, I know, came in and he stood there and looked ever so sad. And he just then gave us a little lecture about all creatures, great and small, and took us out in the alley and showed us an anthill and got down on one knee and showed us they are carrying these pieces of bread down this hole, and they all were organized and kind of a little army of ants. And he didn't really scold us in the sense of making us feel like we were awful, but I'll tell you, from that point on, I was not a stabber of frogs or a shooter of sparrows or whatever, because he had a reverence for life and the created order. He made me know that the little ant was part of God's idea too, though I didn't understand ecology in those days.
A poll that we took talked about adults and their parents. We asked people to write in and describe the relationship with their parents and what were the joys and frustrations. And I missed it all the way around and what I expected to come from that poll. I thought people were going to write in about in-law problems and complain about, you know, my husband's mother and father and so on. Instead, the number one complaint adults have about their parents is that they wouldn't allow them to grow up. And they were still telling them how to peel carrots and stuff. You remember that? Yeah. And the number two complaint was that the grandparents were not really interested in their kids. They were off into their own world. Yep. They were doing other things that they didn't have the time. This little girl said, grandparents are the only ones who have time. They were complaining by saying, my parents don't have time for my kids and aren't interested. Yeah. I'm going to now come forward a couple of more years, and we had a guest on the program whose first name was Florence, about grandparenting, and I don't remember her last name, but she brought a poem, and I dug it out right before we came in here about what we're talking about, and the title of it is Where Have All the Grandmas Gone? She said, or the author said, in the dim and distant past, when life's tempo wasn't fast, Grandma used to rock and knit, crochet, tat, and babysit. When the kids were in a jam, they could always call on Gram. In that day of gracious living, Grandma was the gal for giving. But today she's in the gym, exercising to keep slim. She's off touring with the bunch or taking clients out to lunch, going north to ski or curl. All her days are in a whirl. Nothing seems to stop or block her. Now that grandma's off her rocker.
that's exactly the idea, isn't it? Well, that's surely true. And yet, I have a one course I teach, and it's a course in contemporary youth ministry. And I start with Timothy, where Paul speaks to Timothy about his grandmother, his mother, and then himself. And so I try to go back three generations with these kids and help them understand how we got where we are as young people today and how youth ministry got where it's at and how youth culture. So I start out with an open-ended question. I say, tell me your parents' story, your father's story. And there will be silence. And then I ask them, tell me your grandparents' story. And it'll be like popcorn. They'll say, my grandfather, he believes in hard work. He grew up in the Great Depression. He was in the Second World War, and he knows something about patriotism. My grandfather feels there's no free lunches or whatever. And they'll give me about 50 little pieces of folk wisdom that immediately they identify with their grandparent. And I go back to the parent thing and say, well, what's your dad's story? And they're very, very quiet. And I've discovered that for some reason or another, there's kind of a skipped generation here. The parents of today's college students, own parents, seem to be uncertain about many of the certitudes of life. And so then we get into, what were your parents doing when they were your age? Well, we're in the middle of the 60s. We're in the sexual revolution. You know, X percentage were involved in recreational sex, X number of percentage were in drugs and whatever. And so what we find is that these kids, a lot of at least today's college students, have to skip a generation to go back to any sense of certitudes. And I find this fascinating, and I think grandparents can, by inserting some of the things they've picked up over time, can do something about the kind of the relativism of this particular culture.
It's a sad commentary on this generation of parents, isn't it?
Well, it is. Sad's the right word, I think. It's sad in the sense that I think, for instance, one of the things the kids conclude is, my dad doesn't want to be a hypocrite. That is, he was sexually irresponsible as a boy, therefore he doesn't want to tell me to be careful because he doesn't want to be a hypocrite. You know, at least I'm not a hypocrite. Or they are afraid to talk to me straight on about alcohol and drugs because that was such a part of their youth and they survived it after all. And so they just kind of get quiet on these subjects. And the kids are saying, what is the real story here?
You know, last summer, Shirley and I had an opportunity to visit the Normandy area where the landing occurred in June 6, 1944. And we went to the American cemetery there and went to the little chapel. And I mean, it was deeply moving. I just knelt there in that little chapel and wept. And I walked back and forth and looked at all these crosses and the dates of birth of the men who were buried there, a few women, but mostly men. And they were 19, 17, 18, 21, 22. And, of course, the generation that produced those soldiers that died there produced the generation that went into rebellion in the late 60s. And I was just thinking that the young men and women who paid that supreme sacrifice, not just those who died there, but those who died on other foreign fields during World War II, and those who survived but were separated for years and their lives were torn up, that generation produced the generation of kids that hated them, that despised them. They paid that price for our freedom and for the victory, and yet they were absolutely rejected by their own children who threw over their values and mocked their values and mocked their God. It's just an interesting cultural thing.
Well, or perhaps they were indulged, you know. Sometimes people who paid such a price and lost their youth came back and decided, that's not going to happen to my kids. Therefore, they had been raised on solid values, and then they said, well, I'm not going to have my kid working for a living. I'm going to provide this for them. And it's the period that, for instance, the education became an entitlement for everybody and so on. Yeah. And so in a sense, there was an indulge generation there whose parents said, I'm going to spare them this kind of problem. I was raised in the Depression, then I went the way to war, and I've lost my youth. I'm going to let them have a real good one. Well, it may not be the best thing
it
in the world.
It just doesn't work that
way.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem to be. History has lessons to teach.
Jay, your book, Grandparenting, the Agony and the Ecstasy, deals with these practical things we're talking about. Let's focus on some of the suggestions and recommendations in this book. First of all, I'd like to know the background to it, because it's my understanding that a survey of 1,000 grandparents was done, or 1,000 people in Fort Wayne, Indiana?
Yeah, we had a conference, a family conference, primarily a women's conference, and I told the women that I was going to try to do a book on grandparenting, and I'd like for them to dredge up out of their experience what their grandparents had contributed as significant others in their life. And I was amazed when I got the mail back how powerfully grandparents had affected the value system of these people. In fact, grandparents were in some ways more important to them than parents. And so I collected a lot of this stuff, and it was very helpful to write off of this in the grandparenting thing.
Well, tell us what several things grandparents should be trying to accomplish with their grandkids.
Well, I talk about growing pains, for instance, the fact that kids grow up pretty insecure. You know, will I ever become a pretty young lady? Will I ever be a manly man? Well, I talk about the importance of grandparents affirming these things over and over in the survey. The people said, my grandma or my grandpa is the only person who ever really believed in me. They always said, yes, you can do it. Go ahead and try it. You can do it. You're going to be something. You're going to amount to something. I'm encouraging grandparents here to do a lot of this affirmation of kids, that they need the assurance that, yes, if you've lived a long time, yes, you will find a husband. Yes, you will be able to go to college. You can pass. I did. That kind of stuff. Grandparents did a lot of that stuff. People have a lot of common sense, really, but the literature, I think, is making people are afraid to do things. This has been true, Jim, your book, Dare to Discipline. I mean, who thought we shouldn't? You know, I mean, doesn't everybody,
why do you have to make a case?
But you did. The book became a national bestseller and became a real problem to a lot of people with modern social theory because someone said dare to discipline. Well, basically, you didn't teach people how to discipline. You affirmed something they already knew.
They also play a role in encouraging parents, don't they?
Sure.
In saying, now, don't look too quickly for the person your child is going to be. This is really going to turn out all right.
Don't count the score at halftime.
That's right. This is a phase. This is going to pass.
And to remind the parent that they went through this. You know, a lot of times parents have selective memory, too. You know, the thing that makes the good old days is a poor memory, sort of. And grandparents can kind of remind their own children, hey, remember when you were going through this struggle? You know, when you were 17, remember that boy that you fell in love with and I didn't really think he was the right kind of boy and so on, and we argued and you pouted, and well, that's what she's going through. Back off. It'll be all right. Yeah, it's a very important role of grandparenting. Not hands-on, but affirmation, cheerleading, on the edge, assurance, affirming, this kind of role.
What role do grandparents play in second-guessing parents? How far do they go in saying you're making a mistake there? You know, that's really, you're being too harsh or you're being too permissive. What advice do you have for grandparents?
Well, I've suggested in this book that that be done very carefully, you know, lest drive a wedge. And yet there is a time, I think, when serious things are happening to take a son or daughter of your own aside, away from their own spouse, and in a quiet atmosphere, simply say, I've been observing this, I'm concerned about it. I'm sure you have your reasons, but here's something I'm observing. And I found in this survey that a great many parents felt they'd been helped that way. But on the other hand, it's kind of like, you and I are fishermen, so I use fisherman's metaphor, but if you've got a 10-pound bass on and you know you got a 3-pound line, you handle them in a certain way. If you got a 10-pound bass on, you got some piece of wire, you know, you fish with out in the ocean, you can horse him in the boat. I think the thing I'm saying to grandparents is you always sense I've got a 10-pounder on here with a 3-pound line, and you do this very carefully. Yeah, it takes skill. You can't horse them in the boat, or they'll simply just feel you're interfering. Mom and Dad don't know, and so on.
A good memory crutch for me is A but not O. Yeah. Advice but not ownership.
Yeah. Yeah.
You say, this is what I would do. I think you're making a mistake here. There might be a better way to do this, but it's your child. And if you don't choose to take my advice, I accept that because I had my day and this is yours, and you don't try to force it. You know, there's a whole different attitude
there was one universal that ran through the whole survey that I found absolutely fascinating, humorous, and Janie and I had to confess it's ours too. And it was that universally grandparents agree that grandchildren obey better when the parents aren't around. When they're in the grandparents' home and the parents aren't around, the kids do real well. As soon as the parents walk in the door, the dynamic changes and the kids start misbehaving and so on. And we struggle with this quite a bit. I talked to quite a lot of parents about this. And the conclusion was that many of them felt that they could not be themselves around their own parents. They were so anxious to be the best parent in the world that whenever they were in their parents' house, first of all, they'd drive up in front of the house and warn the children, now we're going to grandma's house, I want you to behave, you know, and everybody was up there. It's like standing ready to make a free throw and someone calls time out, you know, to ice them, you know, and they're iced when they come in like that. And so I suggest off of that, we can learn a real lesson, and that is to, in the home, when the parents are there, it's the parents' problem, not your own, you know, back away and let the parents do the discipline. Two people can't do it because kids catch on to this very, very quickly.
Oh, boy, they'll play one against the other,
Absolutely.
Won't they?
Yeah.
Well, Jay, the title of your book, again, is Grandparenting, the Agony and the Ecstasy by Dr. Jay Kessler. And there's a lot of practical advice in here. We're not just talking about grandparenting. Jay is talking to grandparents about the very real world kind of problems that come up. And there's just an awful lot here that we need to talk about. We're going to do it by recording tomorrow. Thanks for making this long journey to be with us. And we'll plunge right back into your book in a moment or two.
You're listening to Family Talk, and that was part one of Dr. Dobson's classic conversation with Dr. Jay Kessler on the topic of grandparenting. As a grandfather myself, I found today's program especially helpful. It's good for us grandparents to remember that we are cheerleaders, both for our grandchildren as well as their parents, our adult children. We are in a unique position to provide encouragement, affirmation, and wisdom, so let's not take our role and responsibilities lightly. To listen to any part of today's program that you might have missed, visit drjamesdobson.org/broadcast. That's drjamesdobson.org/broadcast. Or give us a call at 877-732-6825. And hey, if you want to drop us a line, please write to us at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute, P.O. Box 39000, Colorado Springs, Colorado, the zip code 80949. I can tell you that Dr. Dobson loves to receive your letters, and his team makes sure that each one is read. If you can find it in your heart to support the broadcast financially, we encourage you to please prayerfully consider making a gift to Family Talk. Together, we can change culture and strengthen families for the future. Again, our ministry mailing address is the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute, P.O. Box 39000, Colorado Springs, Colorado, the zip code 80949. Well, that's it for today. Please join us again next time for part two of Dr. Dobson's conversation with Dr. Jay Kessler, right here on Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.